Moscow wasn't always so eager to promote peace. A book filled with formerly secret documents offers a new look at a desperate struggle to break free from what was then the Soviet Union. Citizens of Hungary revolted in 1956. You might have read about the uprising in school, but it is hard to reconstruct what really happened. Even eyewitnesses disagree, though it's been half a century since Hungarians turned on their radios to learn their revolt was doomed.
Attention, attention. This is Free Kossuth Radio, Budapest. Soviet troops have started an attack against the Hungarian capital with the apparent purpose of overthrowing the local democratic government of the country.
A new book from George Washington University's National Security Archive collects some of the original documents from that time. Malcolm Byrne helped to edit the book, and he joins us now in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you.
Take us back, if you can, to the time of the documents that are spread out there in front of you, government papers and transcripts and so forth. What led to this uprising in Hungary in 1956?
Well, Eastern Europe in the mid-50s was in a state of confusion. Their economies were suffering. Living standards were lower than before the war. And they were sick and tired of the general feeling of oppression that they had been subjected to, and they decided enough was enough.
So in this Eastern European country that was dominated by the Soviet Union, you suddenly had an armed revolt. You had mobs in the streets.
Right. This was, at one point, one of the brightest moments of the Cold War, a striving for national independence and human dignity. And at the next moment, it was the darkest moment of the Cold War, where all of those bright hopes were completely crushed. Soviet tanks and troops started rolling into Budapest. Within 3 days, they had crushed all armed resistance.
Can you describe to me how you went about trying to gather up the basic primary documents from that time and trying to learn in greater detail what really happened and why?
We started out looking at the U.S. side of things using the Freedom of Information Act. But in looking at the U.S. side, because the U.S. had played such an indirect role in events, it was inherently unsatisfying if you were trying to find out what actually happened. Well, in 1991, with the collapse of the Soviet Union, incredible new opportunities presented themselves. And so in the spring of 92, my colleague Tom Blanton and I went to Eastern Europe, to Poland and Hungary and Czechoslovakia at that point, and scouted out organizations and scholars and other individuals who we thought might be interested in working with us to try and uncover what had happened.
You ran into people who had actually been on the streets in Budapest in 1956.
Absolutely, and their stories were fascinating. There was one woman named Maria Wittner, who was a teenage freedom fighter at the time. She was particularly active at the Hungarian radio building in Budapest, which was one of the centers of opposition, one of the early battle scenes. After shots rang out from the Hungarian side, from the authorities' side, it soon developed into a pitched battle. And so rebels of various stripes, having found weapons from various sources, started to fight back. And one of the things that she did was essentially to, you know, feed ammunition into automatic weapons to shoot back at the Soviets and at the security forces.
What did she want to know? What did she still need to learn about the uprising that she could learn from these papers that you were collecting?
Well, like all Hungarians, I think she had a thirst for understanding exactly what motivated the authorities to act this way. And she also wanted to be a voice for her comrades in arms who were no longer able to speak. And I think she felt an incredible responsibility to say her piece. And one of the main points that she wanted to make reflects on some of the materials that we have here, which have to do with the role of Radio Free Europe in the uprising. And it's a dark chapter in the history of the radio.
I just want to mention Radio Free Europe was subsidized by the United States. These are broadcasts across the Iron Curtain to people in Soviet satellite countries and Russia itself.
That's right. For the most part, a mixture of news and cultural broadcasts. But in 1956, the problem that arose was that the revolution inspired such hopes on the parts of the emigre broadcasters who played a part in RFE.
Hungarians working for the U.S.
That's right, who broadcast in their native language into Hungary. It raised such expectations of finally a transformation that a number of them essentially lost control. During the revolution, one of the things that made this tragic was the fact that so many Hungarians listened to RFE and possibly to other broadcasts. There's a little bit of uncertainty about the actual source of some of these broadcasts, but learned from these broadcasts that Western help was imminent, that the UN would be supporting their actions, you know, implied that there might be military assistance to come. All of these things created a sense in a lot of Hungarians' minds that if they just kept going, then the West would come riding to the rescue. And that was never anyone's intention in the West. It's very clear from these documents that President Eisenhower had no intention of doing anything that he thought might raise tensions and possibly lead to global war with the Soviets.
What did the survivors say when they were reminded or discovered through these documents that they revolted and that friends and relatives perhaps were killed because of these false hopes?
Well, we had a conference in Budapest in 1996 on the 40th anniversary, and we specifically organized a panel on Radio Free Europe that included the author of this internal report that I mentioned, named William Griffith. He was no longer alive, but he was a political advisor, and he was in charge of the Hungary desk of RFE at the time. And one of the most dramatic moments was when Maria Wittner and other Hungarians confronted Griffith, saying, "How could you have let this happen? This artificially raised our expectations and caused who knows how many casualties."
The question is raised in some of the introductory essays to this book full of documents, whether history might have turned out a little differently here.
Well, I think it seems like this was almost inevitable given the mindset of the people at the time. It's very tempting to think that, boy, if just one or two things had been different, then the whole outcome would have been different.
Malcolm Byrne works for the National Security Archive, and he edited The 1956 Hungarian Revolution, A History in Documents. Mr. Byrne, thanks very much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Steve.